All right, and welcome back to the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners, Physical Athletics. You can find them on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic. That's F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L, Athletic, singular. Again, that's Physical Athletic. And you can also find them on their website at physicalathletics.com. My next guest, he is very unique coach doing incredible things on multiple levels in the game in this country. He is he's currently joining us via the Sun City Academy Prep Hotline is Coach Ed Carty. Coach Carty is the assistant coach for Trinity for D3 Power Trinity University men's soccer program, as well as the head coach for the state and national power Central Catholic High School Buttons, who have won four consecutive TAP state Division I state titles and are now vying for their fifth consecutive state title and their sixth in 8 years, if I have that right. Coach Carty, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Hector. It's a pleasure to be here on the podcast.
Hey, we're excited to have you. We kind of got some high school, I call it some high school coaching royalty here. He's got multiple, he's on the verge of having more, or yeah, having more rings, right, than fingers on one hand. So that's awesome. All right, Coach, we're going to dive right in. So talk to us, kind of the question, the lead-in question that I ask a lot of coaches. Yours is a little bit unique since you're on multiple programs, multiple levels. So describe to us, what has been your experience in leading both a high school and a college program during COVID?
COVID has presented many unique challenges, but both of the institutions where I work, I think, have devised a really strong plan for us to be able to move forward with as close to a sense of normalcy as possible, while really keeping strict protocols in place to all of the athletes safe. At the college level, the resources have allowed us to implement weekly testing for all of the athletes. They have a digital system where when the athletes come into the building to go into the locker room, their face is scanned and the facial recognition logs their temperature in the system, and it's all recorded automatically. Wow. On the high school level, we're not using quite as much technology, but regular testing and screening protocols, along with sanitization of all of the equipment, implementation of masks or gaiters anytime the athletes are not on the field actively playing, social distancing in terms of bench spaces, the way that locker rooms are used or not used is very different now. But overall, I'm thankful for the fact that the administrations have found ways to allow the athletes to continue to play, which I think is extremely important, obviously for their development soccer-wise, but also for their physical, mental, and emotional health during a very stressful time in their lives. And who knows what types of stresses their families might be under when they're off the field and away from the team. So it's great for them to have that release and be able to play the game that they love, and to have that sense of camaraderie with their team and normalcy in their lives. From a coaching point of view, I would say that, other than following some new protocols, but more or less almost everything that we would normally be able to do, we are still able to do with some of those protocol modifications, but it just takes about double to triple the amount of work to do the same things in terms of following those protocols and keeping everyone safe. There is also an additional financial component to, taking extra buses to allow for social distancing on travel, different numbers of athletes in hotel rooms on road trips and things like that. So doing those things safely has involved an extra commitment on the part of the schools. And at both of the schools that I'm at, I'm really fortunate and blessed that the schools have committed the resources to doing it that way, so that we're still able as a team to play our seasons and take advantage of those types of opportunities. But it's definitely an added layer of stress for you as a coach, because you can't necessarily predict what player or groups of players are going to be available or unavailable at the drop of a hat. You know, if weekly testing results from Wednesday come back on Thursday and you have a group of players that are out, then your ability to adjust to that on the fly to deal with players coming in and out of quarantine as they deal with symptoms, or even if they're completely healthy, but they were exposed to someone else. So now you're designing your training regimen for your team in your sessions together, but you also are designing at-home training regimens for the athletes that are having to train independently. You know, at the college level, the training room and our full-time strength coach help with that. At the high school level, that falls a little bit more on each individual sport coach to do. So, you know, it's a good problem to have in the sense that we are able to actively coach and it's good to stay busy, but it definitely is a lot of extra work and a lot more uncertainty in terms of being able to prepare a team in the traditional ways, to use some traditional coaching models of how you would structure a session versus how you incorporate social distancing and other safety considerations into the size of your groups, the size of your grids, and other things like that. And then just, you know, fielding a consistent lineup and how you prepare the depth of your squad to be able to step up on a moment's notice.
Yeah, all tremendous points. Absolutely. That's very, very thorough, very in-depth and great stuff. So before we dive in a little bit more, talking about your program specifically, Coach, for our listeners, excuse me, for our listeners that may not be aware, on the high school side, Coach Cardi's program, the Central Catholic Buttons, they're, so that they're a D1 in, obviously we mentioned in TAPS, they are located right in the heart of San Antonio. And then also Trinity University, which is not too far down the road from Central Catholic, also right in the heart of San Antonio. So just kind of wanted to give everybody a kind of a geographic kind of idea. So, all right, Coach. So next question, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. Because you have that unique take of actively involved both at the high school and college level, if you look into your crystal ball, your gut feeling, Coach, you know, Ed Cardi here speaking, what do you think, if you could identify one, the biggest positive to come out of COVID, post-COVID, for both the high school and college game, what do you think those would be? And the college game, maybe specifically, as it relates to D3.
Okay. From a Division III point of view, I think that one of the biggest positives that we were able to take away as a program at Trinity from the socially distanced training model and the smaller training pods that we had to operate within for pretty much the entire fall was forcing the players to have a higher level of attention to detail because we really did hone in on a lot of details, and we did a lot of zonal training where players were spread out and we were working on attacking patterns, or we were working on how players shift within units of the team. We did a lot of technical functional training, and I think it forced players to really focus on their level of execution of some of those small things that matter a lot, as opposed to maybe some of those things being covered up a little bit in the flow of a game where you can make up for it in other ways. So I think it put the players under a microscope in a really good way and allowed us to build some things in a very methodical way, particularly for the new players that are coming into the team, but also as a valuable review and improvement for the returners. From the high school side of things, at Central Catholic, after an initial period of online school, we were able here in San Antonio to feel safe at the school, where they transitioned to a hybrid model. And so we had half of the students in person at the school one day and half of the students in person at the other, and the other half were taking classes synchronously online. But that allowed for them to, you know, reduce the capacity in the building and maintain safety. And one of the really cool things that that enabled us to do from a training point of view was put some players together that might not have trained or played together very much otherwise. You had a good mixture of less experienced and more experienced players. You really broke through a lot of friend groups and built bridges across classes. And I think it was a concern of mine and my assistants going into the fall of whether it was going to hinder our ability to prepare the team, because we weren't actually able to put the two halves of the team together until the first day of practice of the season. But it actually had the opposite effect. I think the unity of the team was strengthened because those bonds were built within those two halves of the team separately. And then when we were able to put that together, there was a lot of chemistry that had developed between teammates that might not have developed in the same way if we had not been constrained to train within those groups the way that we did. So I'm sure that each school probably had a slightly different situation that they worked through. But in my two circumstances, those were major positives that came out of a situation that we were initially, to be honest, quite skeptical about, but it turned out to be far better than what our initial expectations and concerns had been.
That's great. That's great. Always a blessing, always a silver lining and everything. That's awesome. So now talking a little bit more specifically, high school soccer here, the high school game, both. So multiple layers here, right? Locally there in San Antonio, but and also across the state. And in terms of both public and private, what's your assessment in terms of the state of the game right now as it relates to high school and those layers that I mentioned?
Well, I think high school soccer in Texas is really strong. I grew up in North Carolina, and I've lived in other states, and the level of play high school soccer versus club soccer can be very different in different states. But here in Texas, I think there are a lot of very talented players that play for their high school but may not play club soccer for various reasons. The level of coaching and the level of tactical sophistication that you will encounter in high school games here tends to be much higher than I think it might be in some other environments. And there's a lot of parity across the divisions. So in Texas, you have with the public schools, you know, all the way up through 6A. And then with the private schools, you have multiple leagues such as the SPC and TAPS. Central Catholic competes in TAPS Division I, but we play a lot of our non-district games against 5A and 6A public school teams and are very competitive with them, which has, you know, resulted in national rankings for our team. But overall, as a college coach, I recruit at high school games all of the time. Here in Texas, there are usually quality undiscovered players on most of the high school teams in the area, and play club and can be seen in any other environment besides that. So I really enjoy high school soccer for a lot of reasons, but I do think it is good preparation for college if you're fortunate to be in a more quality soccer environment. And I have tremendous respect, admiration, and gratitude for the physics teacher or the assistant football coach who coaches the high school's opportunity to play. That is great. That is good for the game. But particularly when you have a licensed or knowledgeable high school coach, which there are a lot of here in this state, or when you have a number of club players or talented non-club players that form a good core within a high school team where the style of play is good, I think the high school game is in some ways even better preparation than club soccer when it comes to the duration of the season, the number of games that are played within a similar amount of time, and how much recovery you have between games. Right. Playing in front of a full stadium of loud fans, as opposed to, you know, a couple dozen parents and pets at a quiet, you know, soccer complex where there's not a lot of life. I mean, club soccer obviously is still where the majority of the top players and coaches are congregated and concentrated, but I think there's tremendous value to high school soccer, and you know, the likelihood is that it will not happen in America for a variety of reasons. But I think if it were possible to have the club level of coaching present in the school environment, I think that is the closest to a true academy model, where the soccer coach is able to hold his student athletes accountable, his or her, not only for their performance on the field, but also for their behavior in the classrooms, for their academics, for their personal, moral, and spiritual development.
Right.
That all of those things are interconnected in the school environment. The resources and facilities are typically available for you to provide strength training for injury prevention and performance enhancement, perhaps mental conditioning and the psychological pillar of the game. A lot of those things are able to be much more effectively addressed in a school setting where you work with the athletes every day, versus in a club setting where you may only have them for an hour and a half, a few days a week, and you might not have those other facilities, and you certainly don't have the interconnectedness with all of those other dimensions for which a student athlete who advances to the next level will be accountable at the college level. So I think an appropriate balance between what you can get out of a club environment, but also the school environment, when you put those two things together in a balanced way where it's not an overload, but where it's mutually complementary, yeah. I think that's actually an ideal recipe for the development of most student athletes. And of course, there will be exceptions at the very most elite end that need to be in a different environment. But I think there's a lot of untapped potential developmentally in a high school setting. And in Texas, I think there's a lot of schools that are getting that more right than wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it kind of goes without saying that the high school game puts the coach in position to truly be a transformational coach. And that's not to say that a club coach isn't exclusively transactional. But just the sheer amount of time that you get to know your players and the relationship building and the connection with the parents. Yeah. I mean, couldn't agree with you more.
Most of the club coaches that I know are doing great work, but high school coaches just inherently have an advantage for the reason that you said. And if they take that seriously and maximize that opportunity, I think you just have a magnified window to really be a major influence in the life of the young men and young women that you work with. And that ultimately is the most fulfilling, significant, and important reason for what we do.
No doubt. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's further compounded by, if you have a coach, obviously, that is a professionally licensed coach, that's obviously pursuing coaching education, then yeah, absolutely. It just further compounds that everything we just stated. So without a doubt. So in talking to that and speaking to that and in regards to both high school and club, I know you've had a nationally level player you've sent multiple players that are now playing across the board at all levels, college soccer. And then also Jose Gallegos, who's there, played for you, graduated last year, and is now playing for San Antonio FC for the senior team, the top team, and starting and shining. But not just him, but also just your thoughts. And he's obviously just one example, but what are kind of your thoughts in terms of players like him and a little bit that you've already alluded to as far as high school student athletes being able to balance high school soccer as well as club?
The balance is an important lesson, but it's a challenge at the same time. You know, having spoken with Jose regularly, of course, both before and after his transition to being a full-time pro, now that he is a full-time pro, he can focus exclusively on his soccer in a way that he could not before. And that does help a little bit from the development of his soccer specifically. But in terms of preparing a student athlete for college and also for life, I think that it's very similar to weight training in terms of it is designed resistance and adversity, where you deliberately put the student athlete in a situation that's close to or slightly above the threshold of what they can comfortably handle, and you gradually stretch them and force them to learn how to handle those things a little bit more. So I think it's really important for the success of a student athlete at the next level that they go through those types of experiences and learn how to discipline themselves, schedule their routine, budget and manage their time, and get all of those assignments done while still getting adequate sleep every night, taking proper care of their bodies with nutrition, and trying to find what the right balance is of a healthy social life without going to extremes that take away from your other priorities, and having a longer term view of that, and maintaining a multiple hour a day commitment to becoming the most elite soccer player that you can be. When you get to the next level, whatever that is, moving from high school to college, moving from college beyond, talent is obviously essential, but talent is usually not the determining factor. Once you sort of identify the players that are good enough or not good enough, that is still a really large pool of players. And, to use my recruiting situation at Trinity as an example, once we've, sorted players into categories, if we were to close our eyes and throw darts at the wall, and they would hit names that are good enough to play for the team, whether or not those players are the right fit for our team and whether they're going to make the most of their experience and contribute more than other players of a comparable talent level doesn't really depend as much on the soccer as it does on the character and on the professionalism. The professionalism and maturity of the student athlete is almost always the determining factor of whether they succeed or fail when they move up a level. It's one of the reasons why Jose has succeeded. He was the most talented player on my high school team. He was also the most humble and hardworking. And when you see players that think that they're entitled to a different standard because of who they are, that's an indicator that they're not yet ready to move up to the next level. And if they do, they're probably going to struggle either permanently or until they become more self-aware and are mentored by somebody and figure it out and make those changes. So I think that even though it's not always a unequivocal positive in the sense that it is legitimately a distraction, it does compete for your time and attention and sometimes force you to make difficult trade-offs that, in an ideal world, maybe you wish that 15 and 16 year old kids didn't have to make those types of trade-offs and that they could have more free time with friends or play multiple sports. Sometimes those tough decisions have to be made and those lessons have to be learned because it is absolutely what's demanded if they're going to move on to college and succeed in what is a far more stressful environment than any high school situation is ever going to prove to be, with a much smaller margin for error and much higher expectations.
Right. So you, you're at a national power in Trinity University, and you're also, you're also at a state and national power in Central Catholic. And for our listeners, Central Catholic has been nationally ranked in the top 10 over the course of the last 4 years, going on 5 years now. And as we mentioned at the beginning, Coach Cardi has the buttons, primed and ready for their fifth consecutive, vying for their fifth consecutive TAPS D1 state title and their sixth in 8 years. So when you kind of look at all of that, if you can maybe think in maybe one word or two words, how does Coach Ed, you know, Ed Carty, the coach, the person, how do you balance those two, both the high school side, the college side, and just, you know, Ed Carty, the man? If you can think of a word, one word, how do you do that?
In one word, I think I'd have to say sacrifice, because I don't believe that it is possible for you to have it all at the same time and do it all to a high level. And so I think that you have to make tough choices and dedicate yourself with an extreme, almost obsessive commitment to excellence in a few things, and make the tough decision to let other things fall by the wayside. And so the majority of my energy and free time goes towards one program or the other. And you have less personal time as a result. And not everyone is able to make those same decisions. And it changes during different seasons of your life. And it's different if you're a head coach versus an assistant coach, and what the size of the staff is and what the situation is. But, you know, for me, when Trinity is in season, from August to December, it is full on, 80 to 100 hour weeks, including weekends. I'll be lucky if I get 3 days off in total over that 4 month period. When Central Catholic is in season, Trinity is still in their off season training, and we're also recruiting every single weekend. So you're constantly on the go, and one of the biggest challenges is always being present and having the discipline to prepare adequately for everything. But that would be the other word. If I could give you a second one that I think is the key to success, is preparation. It's not accidental. You know, there's a tremendous investment of time. I think I probably prepare about an equivalent amount of time prior to each training session, about equal to the length of the training session itself, sometimes more. Obviously, there's a tremendous amount of additional time that goes into your scouting and game planning. And then with the college team, you know, there's the recruiting aspect as well. And you don't ever really stop in one channel to focus exclusively on the other. You turn the dials up or down, but all of those things are going simultaneously throughout the year. And so it's very demanding, but it's also very rewarding, and something that I cheerfully choose to do. But I think excellence demands a level of commitment that a lot of people are unwilling to make. And I, in many cases, can understand why. But, you know, I'm fortunate to work at two, you know, programs where that is the ethic, and the entire coaching staff and the players have all bought into the idea that winning is not normal, and you have to make extraordinary choices if you want to have uncommon results.
Great stuff. Yeah, that's awesome. My next question here for you, Coach, is because obviously we already know what you all are vying for. We've already mentioned what the expectation is over the course of the next few weeks as far as making that run to Waco. Now, and you've alluded to this a little bit in terms of obviously both sacrifice and preparation, but anything else that you haven't already shared with us in terms of how do you as the head coach, particularly there at Central Catholic, how do you manage super high expectations of a state and national power?
Well, it's a challenge, and I think sometimes you do it better than others. I don't think that I as a coach or the players have always necessarily managed that well enough. You know, a few years ago when won the North Texas Elite Showcase and were ranked number one. I don't think the players reacted very maturely to that. And we dropped a couple of results after that, but they learned from that lesson and that fueled them to go on and win the state title that year. And I think year by year, we always try to build on what was established the year before. So you have to implement all of the same principles and values, but each year we always try to take it one step further. In terms of managing the expectations and the pressure, I think the most important thing is always to return to a developmental model. And it is results driven, of course. Results matter a lot, and it's wrongheaded to tell kids otherwise. But at the end of the day, I always focus on with the players, are you as an individual performing up to your maximum potential? And as long as there's a gap between your potential and your performance, the standard is not how you measure up against another team. The standard is how you measure up versus how good you could and should be. And there are players that are really good that are behind schedule developmentally. And there are players that could be really good that think they're really good who don't play like the player that they believe that they are, that I believe they're capable of being. And so I think you have to hold yourself individually and collectively to the highest standard possible. And when your pressure is internal and positively motivated to raise your level of performance to meet your own goals for what you believe you're capable of achieving, then it starts to remove a little bit of the pressure of what somebody else thinks about you. And I think it's important that the players learn, not just as athletes, but as people, that living your life on the basis of what other people might be thinking about you is a really terrible standard for your conduct and your mental and emotional state and your life. And instead, you have to be guided by principles. You have to be guided by sound counsel and mentorship and a compass that doesn't change with a poll or a ranking. And be able to recognize when someone else tells you that you're doing well, that you might not actually be doing that well. And that when someone tells you that you're not doing well, that you might actually be doing well. And recognize that you can win a game in which you played poorly and desperately need to improve, and that you can play very well and lose. And you need to feel correctly about those performances, even as you strive for the correct results. And it's much easier said than done. But I think that is the most important strategy of the team each year is how are we building this one brick more than the foundation that we inherited from the previous year's team? And how are we competing against ourselves as an individual to reach our own potential and within our own team to sharpen each other? Our goal is for training to be harder than games and for every single day in practice, us to play against the best opponent that we'll play all season. And if we are meeting those objectives, then I think we're well on our way to achieving our goals as a team of winning a district championship and winning a state championship. But it all starts on the very first day when I give the team their handbook. And on page one, it says, a good player makes the players around him better. And I tell the players, by definition, it is impossible for you to be a good player if you are not improving the players around you. It does not matter how well you individually performed. If you did not have a positive influence on the adjacent players' performance of their roles and their improvement towards their goal, you're not a good player yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that's exceptionally well said. And I think as coaches, I think that's kind of the brutal love affair we have with the game, where you can win games that you have absolutely no business winning, and you can lose games that you dominate. Right?
It's a very cruel mistress, this sport that we love, but I think it's important for the players to always take responsibility in those situations for the things that they can control. And have an appropriate understanding of, I couldn't control that, and that increased the adversity level, but it still wasn't a foregone conclusion. What could I have done to have changed the outcome?
Right. Yeah. So make sure for our student athletes out there listening, you know, Coach Cardi has hit on so many great things, including, you know, talk about sacrifice, preparation, control the controllables, as well as, yes, you heard it here from a D3 recruiting coordinator, all right, at a national power, that yes, college coaches do recruit at high school games. So, and in full disclosure, because I always like to be honest with our listeners, full disclosure, Coach Cardi and I, we go back to my time when I was at St. Mary's Hall. He's a coach that I have tremendous respect for. We were in the same district for a little while. I was the director of soccer there at St. Mary's Hall, and didn't have to face him directly since I was on the women's side, thank God. But thank you for being here, Coach. We appreciate you. I know you're going to stick around with us for another segment. We'll bring you back shortly for our counterattack segment. And for our listeners, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Coach Cardi. And welcome back to the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners, Physical Athletics. Make sure you check them out on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic. That's FYZICAL Athletic singular. And you can also check them out on their website at physicalathletics.com. All right, we're back with Coach Cardi, head coach, Central Catholic Buttons, and the assistant coach and recruiting coordinator of the Trinity University men's soccer program. We're ready to go. Counterattack. Are you ready? The big moment. It's here.
Let's do it.
All right. So first one, right out of the gate, as a coach, not in your time when you were a player, but now as a coach, any pregame or postgame rituals?
I have a specific pregame routine that the team follows. And for me, it's always just about making sure that all of the administrative tasks are done in time for me to be available for the players for that, whether that's setting the field or, getting a player a spare jersey or coordinating with our equipment manager or whatever the case might be. So game days are always, I think, for the players, a time when you're just the anticipation builds all day and you can't wait to get to the game. And as a coach, it's a mad rush of frantic activity. And it's actually a slowdown and a relief when you get to the team talk and the match because of all the preparation that goes on before that. So no superstitions really or anything. It's just a very busy few hours getting everything prepared for the match. And then a pleasure when you get to actually sit down and watch the players apply what they've worked on in training that week.
Other sport you would have coached in a different life?
My favorite sport to watch besides soccer is hockey. So I guess I would say that, even though I have absolutely no experience or connection with it, but I love how fast paced it is. I love the teamwork aspect, and it's just such an incredible athletic feat to do all of that on skates. I love watching it. And I think in an alternate life, I would have enjoyed trying to throw myself into that.
Yeah. Hockey's pretty interesting to love it in person. It can be a little, it can be a bit of a challenge to watch on TV at the fast pace and that tiny little puck. But I love to watch it too.
That is true, although I do enjoy watching it on TV, but it is the best in-person spectator sport, period, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so here we go back to the another life. Other profession, if not a coach, what would you have been?
An author. I think I would have enjoyed attempting to both write biographies and also fiction. I enjoy expressing myself through writing.
All right. Favorite Netflix, whether it be Netflix or other, other platform, favorite series you've had a chance to binge watch since the pandemic?
Since the pandemic is going to be zero, actually. And I don't have time to subscribe to many platforms, but in terms of favorite television show, I would say Iron Chef America or Chopped. which is ironic because I'm a terrible cook, but I also really enjoy Monk and Seinfeld. So right. those would be my go-to television shows.
I thought you were going to tell me you're too busy writing a book as a wannabe author that you just no time for Netflix. That's what I thought you were going to say.
I actually am in the process of writing a book right now in my non-existent spare time.
Exactly. All right. All right. So back to the soccer scene here. Favorite and least favorite soccer team, any level, college, you know, obviously you can't say Trinity or Central Catholic, but college, pro, you know, domestic, foreign, whatever.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, as a coach, you admire quality soccer from any professional club. And so you don't necessarily follow one club as a partisan because you try to take the good qualities from all of them. So I'll actually focus on a Division III men's college soccer program that I think deserves more notoriety than they get and a ton of admiration, and that would be Messiah. Mm-hmm. They're obviously the gold standard for Division III men's soccer in terms of how many national championships they've won on the men's and the women's side, honestly. But I love the way that they are such a consistent program year in, year out.
Right.
And the values that they stand for, I think it's a great example of what a program can be like. Least favorite, I would rather not answer, but because
nobody wants to answer that question.
I'm not going to say the first team that comes to my mind, but I think I would probably respond by saying any team that has players that are capable of playing a more skillful style and voluntarily chooses to play a more disruptive style. I don't respect that. I respect teams that don't have the tools to do anything else and that play that way to compete. Part of the beauty of our game is that there's so many different approaches to it.
Right.
But I do view it as a betrayal of player development when a coach has the opportunity and the talent to approach it differently and they choose to reject that and go the other way.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. No, I like that. That least favorite soccer team part. Nobody. That's like it's radiation. Nobody wants to touch that one.
Well, off the air, it's an easy answer, but I'm not going to tell you on the podcast.
All right. Non-soccer, you can maybe dive into hockey here if you like. I don't know, but favorite, and I'm going to ask it again, favorite and least favorite non-soccer team.
Favorite and least favorite non-soccer team. I think that across all team sports, I would probably say that my least favorite team would be the New York Yankees in baseball. And my favorite non-soccer team would be the Chicago Blackhawks.
All right. Awesome. You have a unlimited subscription to the 50-50 podcast, and you can come on anytime just for by virtue of not liking the Yankees. All right. So I'm extending that invite now. So, I feel you on that one. The Yankees for sure.
Apologies to all Yankees fans. And I love Derek Jeter, but I can't get for the team.
You know, had you said, you know, favorite is the Lakers, I think I would have just walked away, left you talking by yourself, because I've had a run of Lakers fans lately that I just, oh my, you know, including, you know, Randy Waldrum, the Texas boy, you know, I had him on here, Coach Waldrum, and he said the Lakers. I was like, man.
Well, I grew up in North Carolina, and although we do have a professional franchise there, I'm not an NBA fan. I do have a lot of respect for the Spurs model and the way that Coach Popovich has done things with that organization, but I just really could answer the NBA in response to your question. I know that a lot of people love that and will not understand my perspective on it, but when you don't have to defend the entire year in any regular season game, and when the entire thing is a show rather than a competition sport, You know, I would much rather watch college basketball, but definitely would not be having the Lakers as a favorite. I mean, any NBA team besides the Spurs, I don't have interest in, and I don't really follow the Spurs either, but I respect right. very much the way that, particularly in the Duncan era and the right. David Robinson era, that they were both on and off the court.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Next one. Any hidden talent, secret talent, something very few people know about you, maybe even your players.
I mean, I don't know how well known or unknown it is, but languages. My father is fluent in 5 languages and is also a very gifted musician. My brother got all of the music talent. I got 0 of that, but I did get the gift of languages. So I'm fluent in 3 languages and moderately proficient in 2 others. And I enjoy not only the language communication aspect itself, but also all of the study of history and culture and understanding of other perspectives that opens up. I've been fortunate in my lifetime to travel to a lot of foreign countries. And so I think that is maybe a broad answer, but those areas of interest, I think are one of the unique things about me that may or may not come out in a daily conversation or a normal soccer, you know, coach player interaction.
I know you're not a bragger, but you have to brag here. So what are the languages? Share them with us.
Besides English, obviously, fluent in Spanish and Mandarin Chinese, and then relatively proficient in Portuguese. In addition to that, I can't speak very well, but I can read and write fairly fluently. And then, you know, any of the, you know, similar Romance languages to Spanish, you know, I wouldn't claim to be good, but you can usually understand well enough and then speak back to them in Spanish and get by. And that actually, I think, is really cool when it's not perfect, but you're still able to get through to people. When I studied abroad post-grad the year after I graduated Trinity in Taipei, Taiwan, I played on a team that had multiple nations and ethnicities represented, and several of our players on our team were completely incapable of communicating verbally with any of our other teammates. There were 3 or 4 guys on the team who I could not understand a word they said. They didn't speak any language I understood. I didn't speak any language that they understood, but it was beautiful because we all understood the language of soccer. Yeah. And we were able to play together and have an incredible friendship that lasts to this day over distance. Despite the fact that we couldn't have a normal conversation. Yeah. And I think the potential for that is fascinating and very rewarding.
And that is part of the reason why they call it the beautiful game and they call it the world's game. Exactly. So that's awesome. I love hearing those stories. All right. So next one here, you got me a little nervous here. I don't know if you've actually seen these now. So, all right. So the soccer series that have been out in the last year, the All or Nothing Tottenham, Sunderland Till I Die season 2, Ted Lasso. Have you seen any of them or all of them? And which is your favorite?
I've only seen highlights and excerpts from each of them. The Tottenham one is on my watch list due to a lot of recommendations from coaches who I respect. And due to the quality insights that I've gleaned just from the excerpts that I've been able to view. I think Ted Lasso is just a classic from a comedic point of view. But, you know, when we talked earlier about sacrifice, you know, I really do make an effort to prioritize my media viewing. And if it's not professional development, it usually is out the window. And even from that standpoint, just kind of a personal thing, but I'm fairly thorough and fairly methodical in my approach to things. And I do find it aggravating to start something and not be able to pick it up again for a few weeks or to never be able to finish. So, you know, when you mentioned earlier about binge watching, that really is it. A lot of times often I will not stay current with the latest thing, but once the entire series is complete over the off season, when I might have a little bit more time, I'll try to dive into it and get through it from start to finish. And I also do that for the purpose of being able to take notes and really try to make sure that the good things that I hear or read stick with me. I don't like listening to podcasts while I'm jogging or, you know, reading on a bus or something when you're not able to really be analytical about it. You know, I usually have my computer open or a notepad open by my side to take notes, to be able to go back and refer to the quotes or the timestamp of when something was said, because I would rather digest a smaller quantity of high quality information that's going to stick with me that I can apply and use, then sort of drown myself in good things and hope that some of it gets through by osmosis, but not really chew on it and incorporate it fully. So it's not a typical way to consume media, but it's what I find works for me to be able to process and apply it better, right, and also not to overload myself. I don't know if that sounds weird, but I feel like there reaches a point in each season where you do have to stop experimenting with new ideas, and you have to stick with what you've settled on as the theme for that year. And it's going to go well or it's not going to go well, and then you're going to analyze after the season and you're going to revisit it. But for the sake of not confusing the players or myself, I think it's important to have a smaller set of crystal clear ideas, rather than throw out a bunch of positive sounding catchphrases that are not intentionally implemented on a daily basis.
So small correction there. The only podcast that Coach Cardi will listen to while jogging is the 50-50 podcast. So thought I'd
plug that. That is correct. When I have time for a jog.
There you go. All right. So here's a different one that you can share. Funniest moment you can recall in practice or a game?
There's so many witty comments and comebacks that players will have in moments of banter and repartee, but between them that are just brilliant, but they may or may not actually have the humor outside of the context of that moment. Right. But I think seeing humor in everyday life is extremely important. I think that humor is an important coaching tool to be able to soften something corrective that you might have to say to a player that otherwise could come across as fairly harsh. And I think that the sense of humor of some of the coaches that I had when I was growing up are some of the moments that I just keep going back to in terms of banter with referees or other coaches or players that my club and high school coaches when I was growing up have. You know, those inside jokes and stories are stuff that I tell over and over again. Right. But at without hopefully being too crude, the particular example that I'll give, this was actually from one of my coaching license courses. Nick Zlatar, who is a revered mentor to many coaches that are mentors in turn to many other top level coaches, a legend in the American soccer scene. But this story was told about him. I assume it's true. I've met Nick. He's a good friend of Coach McGinley's and someone who I have a ton of respect for. But apparently he brought in a group of his mentees at a coaching course, who apparently weren't getting the point that he was trying to make. And in his raspy voice, he tells them, he said, "One time I pulled a hair out of my ass and my eyes watered. What does that mean?" and the coaches are all looking at him dumbfounded. And finally, someone has the courage to ask, no idea, what does that mean? And Coach Zlatar goes, everything's connected.
Wow. All right. That's awesome. Good stuff. That's a great, great story. You'll have to mention more of that offline. All right. All right. So final question here. I asked this one to everybody, and you've kind of already laid the foundation for this one because, and I'm paraphrasing here, because you said you stink at cooking, but all right. Post pandemic, you got family coming in from out of town, everywhere, friends, big group. You're the chef. You're cooking for everybody. What are you cooking?
I would do a Thanksgiving meal. That's my favorite meal of the year. I think it should be had many times a year, not just then. And so I would want to go with a glazed ham, and I would want to go with au gratin potatoes and sweet potato casserole and corn pudding and cranberry apple, crumble and all of the stuff that my mom makes that I have such fond memories of. And any excuse is a good excuse to have that meal. And I think the end of the pandemic would certainly qualify.
Absolutely. That's different. I like that. And I've had that conversation in the past before too, about, hey, why do we only do this once a year? But yeah.
Great. Well, it's important to keep special things special. Right. I don't think it should be a weekly occurrence, but once a year is not enough.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, hey, Coach Carty, this has been tremendous. You're obviously, I know it goes without saying, our friendship and relationship goes back many years, and it's always a pleasure to have a coach that's doing things the right way and is being part of setting the standard for many of us, not just in the high school game, but obviously in the college game as well. And you're a coach that I have tremendous respect for, because again, you're doing things the right way, putting the premium on character and leadership and, people development first, along with the player. So I cannot tell you enough how much I respect that. And I greatly appreciate you having you on this show. Anything else? Any plugs as far as information on Central Catholic, Trinity University, or Coach Carty himself, where we can find you? Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate the good work that you're doing on this podcast, Coach, and it's an honor to be invited, and thanks for the opportunity to speak. For any high school age club or high school players, student athletes that are looking to be recruited to play in college, recruit the school. Don't wait for the school to recruit you. Many programs and Trinity included are live streaming a lot of their games now. So it would be good if you could go see a college soccer game in person, if and when restrictions lift and that is possible. But at a minimum, watch teams play, because Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, junior college, there are elite soccer teams and soccer teams with winning records that play terrible styles and everything in between at all of those levels. It has to do with scholarships and other things, but not with level of play. And so you really need to see these teams play and identify whether or not you would be a good fit there. And be proactive in your communication with us as coaches so that we know when and where we would have opportunities to come see you play as a player. For the younger players, if there are any parents of younger athletes or younger players that are listening, there are certain things that are very, very hard to catch up on after the age of 15, and the development of ball mastery between the ages of 12 and 14 is so critical. There is so much athlete development and still technical and tactical development that remains to be done and actually probably should wait. Some coaches, I think, introduce those things too soon, and there's things that you don't need to teach a 10-year-old player. That player can learn that when he's 14. But ball mastery is something that if you don't have it, you will not advance in the game, and you need to spend hours upon hours in the backyard. The pandemic is actually an opportunity, juggling the soccer ball, improving your non-dominant foot, improving your ability to change direction, And then the other main piece of advice that I would give all young players of any age would be to place a much higher priority on injury prevention. Most athletes are extremely casual and careless with their bodies, and it's one of the biggest lessons that we have to teach the college players in our environment, and something that I try to drill into the heads of the high school players. Stretch and become flexible, and don't just say that I'm not flexible. Become flexible. You can change your body. You can eat and hydrate in ways that improve your performance. You can develop mobility and stability through your core and through your lower body, where you're less susceptible to injury and where you're more likely to recover quickly after an injury, if that does occur. So, you know, be persistent and mentally tough when you go through adversity, but also be smart about not being a candidate for unnecessary extra adversity just because your ankles are stiff, or you don't stretch your hamstrings, or your back is tight, or whatever the case might be. That's preventable. And if you don't prevent it, it rules you out from selection as you move up the ladder. And then for everyone who's listening, just continue to watch soccer, play soccer, promote soccer. This is a beautiful game, and there's an opportunity for everyone to be involved in it in some way, whether that's volunteer coaching, whether that's volunteering to help the coach as a team manager or administrator, whether that's buying drinks for the kids, whether that's chauffeuring your carpool to get the kid to training on time. But, you know, provide those opportunities, take advantage of those opportunities, and support good habits and life lessons throughout all of this, because ultimately very few players are going to go on to play at the highest possible level. And that is okay. But when you become a husband or a wife, a father or a mother, a doctor or a lawyer or a businessman or an entrepreneur or whatever you do, you should constantly be referring back to the character that you developed and the lessons that you learned from being a student athlete. You have a huge advantage over the non-athlete students, because you have a practice field and a training ground for these life lessons. Some of your peers might encounter those types of things for the first time in real life, where there are real consequences and it matters. You're going to encounter it in a safe environment where if you get it completely wrong, you can be forgiven and learn from it and move on. And when you encounter it in real life, it's the fifth or the 50th or the 500th time that you've had to go through something like that, and you're just better equipped. So please don't waste that opportunity.
Well said. Exceptionally well said, Coach. Extra, or a candidate for extra adversity. I'm going to steal that one from you. Okay. I hope you don't mind. I like that one.
Feel free.
I like that one. So, Coach, this has been tremendous. Really, truly appreciate your time, because that's the one thing that us coaches can never, definitely don't have enough of. But we love having you on the podcast. Look forward to hopefully having you back here again in a few months. We'll follow up with you, wishing your programs continued success as Central Catholic makes a run for their attempt for a fifth straight state title, sixth in 8 years. And then also with your modified spring schedule with Trinity University that picks up in February. So best of luck to you, Coach. We'll be cheering you on, and thank you again for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much.